Hello. In this audio snippet, we would like to talk about a topic that seems completely different from anything we have shared before. So this audio snippet will be very unusual, and some of you might start listening to it and turn it off without finishing it, thinking, what am I listening to? This is crazy. But I do hope that you do listen through it, and we hope that the impartation that is intended, that I believe was designed for this audio snippet, will go through, and that you will receive an understanding of something that you did not perceive before, or that you already perceive, but that this audio snippet will help to increase that understanding a little further. So before we get into this strange topic we want to talk about, we just wanted, as we usually do, to talk about a few quick things from headlines, from recent headlines. And one thing we wanted to emphasize that we did not mention in the last few audio snippets regarding the conflict in Israel with the Gaza Strip at the time of this recording. And it's very important to point out, as we've said before, it's not a coincidence that this conflict happened immediately. I think it was, 19 days after the death of America. And so they are related, the death of America and this conflict between Israel, inside Israel. Because Gaza, the Gaza Strip, is part of Israel. Whether people want to think of it that way or not, that is the reality. People should just learn to live with that reality and accept it and embrace it, because that's the only way to have peace there. But the thing is that that conflict is a reflection or a manifestation or is connected to what happened in America that led to its death. And basically, you could say that Israel represents the conservatives in America, and the crazy terrorists in Gaza represent the liberals. And that's why you have a conflict there where neither side is really fully on the side of truth. Maybe Israel is more is closer to the truth than Gaza, but both are cursed and both are astray, just like it happened in America, that conservatives were closer to the truth, but they were unwilling to embrace the full truth. And because of that, we had we have the consequences we have with Democrat terrorists running amok and destroying everything, just like the Hamas terrorists did in Israel. And that's why America died. So that's what's happening in the Middle East at the time of this recording. We have the conservatives represented by Israel versus the liberals represented by the terrorists in Hamas. And so both sides are cursed. One is more cursed than the other, but they're both cursed, and they both deserve to be judged and to suffer until they change their understanding. So that's one thing we wanted to mention. The other thing was just very briefly this news story that came out, and it was posted on Real Clear Politics, which I think is kind of a leftist website, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong on that. I'm not sure. Maybe it isn't. Maybe it is a conservative website. I have never really visited it. But the thing is that there was a link that led to this article, and I think it's not a, I don't think it's left-wing website. It has color similar to Politico, so maybe that's what is throwing me off here. But The article is was posted on the 20th of October of 2023, some days ago, and the headline reads, Lara Logan, judges aren't allowing defense attorneys to even broach the issue of entrapment in January 6th case. So Lara Logan is a reporter, and she was mentioning that that judges are not allowing defense attorneys who are in those January 6th cases where the people who demonstrated on January 6th are being tried in these kangaroo courts. And she's saying that the judges are not allowing the entrapment element to be brought up. And the reason why I wanted to briefly mention this is to emphasize what we were saying before. This is not a coincidence. This came out shortly after we said what we said, that the problem in an American judicial system is that we have, there is so little clarity on what the judicial branch is supposed to do. Not even the founding fathers knew. They didn't know. And they never bothered to tell the future generations, hey, you guys, we don't know what, we didn't know what we were doing when we created the judicial branch. We clearly don't know. Just look at Marbury versus Madison. We clearly didn't have a clue. So because we didn't have a clue, we want to ask you to complete what we did not successfully complete. But instead, they didn't tell the future generations, hey, you need to complete the mess we left or fix the mess we left behind. Instead, it was all just touted as perfection, and generations down the road have continued with this lie and deception that America was founded under a perfect system, as if it had been the New Jerusalem that came down from heaven and therefore should never be questioned. But in this pathetic framework that was created for the judicial branch, there were no boundaries. So now, judges can do this. They can just say, they pull it out of their buttocks and they say, no, you cannot mention entrapment. Why? What are the rules? I mean, why? Who gave them the authority to prevent certain things from being included in a trial? What are the parameters? Who calls them out on it? And you can say, well, you can appeal. Oh, yeah, so other judges. So the judicial branch can monitor itself, but no one can monitor them. It is ridiculous. The judges have authority to demand crazy things. They can, as we were sharing before, they can tell someone, you're going to do 20 days of this or that. If I don't like what you're saying, I'm going to punish you, and you'll have to do this and that. They exercise power that is not defined anywhere. And because it's not defined anywhere, they just become like gods. It's like the courtroom is their heaven, and they're the god of that heaven. Well, it's more like a hell, but they are the god of that room. And they, when they say something, it's almost equivalent to thus saith the Lord judge. And it shouldn't be like that. Judges should be like referees. Referees don't pull rules out of their buttocks in the middle of a game, of a match. They already have a set of rules that they are called to enforce and apply. And if there's no clarity, then they have to bring it up to the rules committee and they have to clarify the rules so that they can enforce it properly. But judges should not be like kings in their courts. And the fact that we allow it to happen, we complain about it when it goes against us, but we don't say, hey, guys, we keep running into this problem. Don't you think it's about time after 247 years that we should fix this? But no, they just keep just plowing on like dumbasses, just forward with no vision whatsoever. So they complain, but no one says, what is the underlying problem here? and that's why the country's dead. But we wanted to mention that quickly because it's related to what we were saying before in the previous audio snippets. Another headline I wanted to share very quickly is from the New York Post. It was posted on the 22nd of October, 2023, and it says, the headline is Trump and Giuliani never fell for Sidney Powell's 2020 election kraken, but the left sure did. So what happened was that Sidney Powell, a female attorney, pled guilty to something in Georgia, I believe, so she decided to plead guilty for a lesser punishment, and she is in the deal forced to testify against Trump, or something like that. And when I read that story, I didn't see it as, oh, Sidney Powell betrayed Trump. No, Trump betrayed Sidney Powell a long time ago, and I've said that before when sharing with other people, when talking about this, so that is the reality. Sidney Powell had a better option, better strategy to fight the election fraud of 2020 with, I believe his name was Mike Flynn. I could be wrong on that. But she and somebody else were trying to convince Trump to approach the whole thing from a different angle. But he kept listening to Giuliani. And Giuliani, many people were saying that he was not really at his best game, that he was drinking a lot and during those days, and maybe so he's not and he's getting old too, so he was really bungling the whole thing, but he kept telling Trump, don't listen to that crazy lady, we're gonna get it done. Well, he didn't get it done, obviously. But the two of them are still, you know, convinced, because Trump never wants to admit he's wrong, never. So he's just reinforcing in his head, no, she really was crazy. And he's trying to distance himself from her and throwing her under the bus, because he had already done that before. So he had already left her to suffer. She was fighting for him, fighting to get him back in the White House and to get the election fraud overturned. And she was doing it on her own resources. I mean, that's how sad it is. And Trump said, nah, I'm sorry. I don't trust you, because Trump never wanted anything that sounded the slightest bit foreign to him. You know, that's the thing that we've said before. The conservatives thought, you know, we have everything here in America, everything in our traditions, but they didn't realize they needed an infusion of something foreign that was foreign to what we've had here, but not foreign in the sense of coming to destroy the good things in America, but it was coming to reinforce them, to correct them, to give them their true sense, their true value, their true meaning, and to have them achieve their true destiny. But we never did that. So Trump is now basically throwing her under the bus the way he does with everybody who goes out on a limb for him. Look at all the January 6th people who are suffering. They went out on a limb to fight for Trump, and Trump didn't do what he needed to do to protect them. And after all of that happened, he basically just let them be, and all he does is complain about it and say, when I get reelected, I will pardon them. But in the meantime, he really has not done much for them. That's what he is. He betrays the people who fight for him, and the people who are treacherous against him, he hugs and embraces and protects and defends and promotes, just like he did with Kevin McCarthy, the SOB that he promoted to be speaker, because he kept calling everybody in Congress to get them all to support McCarthy, and McCarthy turned out to be a worthless rhino, and anybody who had any sense knew that from the beginning, but Trump, being the idiot that he is, didn't realize that. So we just wanted to mention that. And these are just more proof of why America is dead, why the truth has said to America, you're dead, you're useless to me, I have rejected you, I have turned my back on you. But it is what it is. So we just wanted to mention that quickly. We also wanted to share a story that a friend kindly shared via email. It relates to something we talked about in the previous audio snippets from last week, if I'm not mistaken. And the story is from insider.com. And it was posted on the 18th of October, 2023, which is kind of an interesting date for me. The author is Mia Jankovic. It's kind of a Polish name. And the headline says, "A landscaper mowed around a dead man face down on the grass thinking it was a Halloween prop," reports. So this happened, it says the body of a North Carolina man was initially mistaken for a Halloween prop per local reports. Police say a landscaper mowing the lawn saw the body of 34-year-old Robert Owen but thought it was a dummy. Police said they're now investigating his death. And that's all that it says here. And there's a picture apparently of the place where the body was found. And it says China Grove. It says a screenshot from Queen City News from October 16, 2023, showing the property in China Grove, where 34-year-old Robert Owens' body was found by police. And I think that's significant. I'm not sure how, but you know, the fact that the place is called China Grove. But there, the relevance, there are several reasons why we want to share this, that a friend kindly shared via email, because this points to what we were saying before about America trying to prop up a dead cadaver and pretend like it's alive, and the cadaver is stinking up to high heaven, but everybody just decides, oh, let's just open the window. He must have worked out, and he that's why he smells a little, because he worked out and now he's tired and he's just resting on the couch. But the dude is dead. The same thing, you know, with America, the republic, and the nation, the calling, everything is dead. But conservatives just kept saying, no, we are still alive. It's still alive. Living in fantasy island, thinking just complete detachment from reality. So it kind of correlates with this, you know, the guy who was mowing the lawn just kept mowing around him like, oh, you know, he's just a prop, a Halloween prop. And he turned out to be an actual dead person. The fact that his name is Robert is interesting to me, because I think we have shared on these audio snippets that for some reason, the name Robert and America seem to be a bad combination. It's as if every time I've had to engage with a Robert, an American Robert, it's always been kind of like an unpleasant experience, to say the least. Robert has, there's something about the name Robert that's associated with a predator, like someone who hunts and tries to destroy. That's why I was surprised, surprised and not surprised to find out that Hunter Bite Me actually is called Robert Hunter Bite Me. So he goes by his middle name, but his first name is actually Robert. And usually when I want watching shows about crimes, you know, real life crimes and so forth, it's very common from when to hear that the vicious murderer happens to be called Bobby, or, you know, which is a short form of Robert. So I don't know what it is about that name, and if your name is Robert, I'm sorry for saying this, but it's just in general the experience I've had with Robert, and it seems to be more of an American thing. So, that's why it seems fitting that this guy, who was found dead, was called Robert, and Owen, which kind of makes it sound to me like Robert Owen. In other words, we as a nation kept owing the truth a sacrifice of our stupidity, but we never wanted to sacrifice that stupidity, so we died with it. So we died owing the truth. I mean, that's how I don't know why, that's how I see it. And 34 is interesting too, because it makes me think of 34 is associated with the pastoral matriarchy and the pastors feeding themselves and not feeding those that they're supposed to serve, at trying to be served by those that that they should be serving. That matriarchal system that we keep talking about, where the server personality dominates, but the servers, ironically, having the server personality, they like to get themselves in a position of power and then demand a loyalty from those that they supposedly serve, and forcing them to serve them instead of the other way around. So all of this is not a coincidence. And China Grove can be taken two ways, but we'll leave it at that. The thing is, the other thing that's interesting is that the body was found in North Carolina, and the fellow was from North Carolina. And as you may recall, North Carolina, we shared, was the last colony that died. America had a 13-day death process from the 6th of September 2023 till the 18th of September. And one colony, every colony out of the original 13 represented something. And the last colony that died was the colony of North Carolina, what North Carolina represented. So being the last colony that died, it's interesting that this fellow, the body was found in North Carolina, which was the last colony that died. So it all seems very fitting. So we just wanted to mention that very, very quickly. So now that we've said that, now let's begin to talk about the topic. And it's going to get stranger and stranger as we continue. So don't be surprised. You have been warned. I haven't talked about this before. We haven't mentioned it because it seems so off topic and so strange to go into that territory. But I must share that I've been surprised that as we've been talking about or getting to the point where America died, that I kept seeing all these news and these headlines just constantly about Taylor Swift, the singer. Taylor Swift here, Taylor Swift there, Taylor Swift everywhere. And I know, and I kept feeling like this is not a coincidence that as America died, the name of Taylor Swift just kept surfacing and surfacing again. And she continues to be in the headlines every day, it seems. And it all started with her romance with a tight end, I think he is, from the Kansas City Chiefs, an American football team. I think they're the current Super Bowl champions. I don't even know anymore. I couldn't care less. Because the NFL is dead. It doesn't have any relevance anymore. It stopped having relevance some years ago. And I had never heard of this guy, and apparently he's been around for quite a while. Travis Kelce is his name. This tight end for the Kansas City Chiefs. And the strange thing is that I apparently he's very good, I think. But I'm so disconnected from the NFL, I have never heard of the guy. If you had said Travis Kelce before this Taylor Swift thing, I would have said Travis who? And the thing is that she started a romance with this football player, and she attended a game, it's to watch him, and that became like this big thing because everybody was watching her, watching him, And so let me see if I can go to the story. And let me, so I'm going to people.com, and they have a story here posted not too long ago on the 22nd of October, 2023. But what I wanted to emphasize is a date that they mention here. So the headline says, Travis Kelce and Chiefs win fourth game with Taylor Swift cheering him on amid their new romance. And then it says below that, Kelce and Swift first publicly debuted their romance at a Kansas City game on September 24th. And that's what I wanted to emphasize. That's why, like, America finished dying, sadly, on the 18th of September. And less than a week later, 6 days later, then Taylor Swift appears in this football game, watching from the stands, watching her hero Travis Kelce playing football, and that's when it became. When it all exploded, and she's been in the headlines ever since. She's always been kind of in the headlines because she's like a big star. To be frank, I didn't even know that. To be honest, I'm so disconnected from music nowadays because it's so bad. The music nowadays is so bad. And I remember when I was a kid, I kept saying, "Oh, I'm not gonna be like all the older generations." They keep saying, "Oh, the young people listen to horrible music." But sadly, that's where I'm getting. But I think that this time, even the other older generations, they were saying it just because they were holding on to their traditions. I'm not doing it because of that. It's just that I listen to it and I go, my goodness, this is terrible. Terrible, terrible. It sounds like most of the songs I say that over and over again. They sound like they have this mosquito sound. It sounds like they always have this like a mosquito that's buzzing near your ear. And I think it's some sort of technique that they use. And I think it must have been Justin Bieber or someone who introduced that. And everybody just copied it. Because what has happened in America, the culture, as it's been dying off, it's become less and less creative. So now what people are constantly doing is trying to replicate things from the past, or replicate what somebody else did. So everybody's starting to sound the same because the creativity is dead in the American culture, especially now that the country's dead. So I had heard of Taylor Swift, but I didn't know that she was still a big star. Apparently she has been a star for 17 years. And what surprises me about that is I'm going to share with you that I have a list of songs, of my favorite songs of all time. And the list, if I don't have the exact number right now, but I think the current number of songs on that list is around 1,100 songs, 1,100 songs or more. And they are ranked from number one all the way to 1,100. That's a list that has been building over the years. And there are songs there from all decades, from the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, and maybe a few songs from the 2010s. I don't think there's any song from the 2020s because it's so bad now. But you will find every variety of songs there. There is rap, there is hip hop, there is 60s, you know, old music, you know, the Beatles and you know, all the British Invasion groups, and you'll find all sorts of songs there, and songs from different languages, Italian, Spanish, English. I think there's even one song that's German, that's in German. So there is a wide variety of songs there. Oh, there's grunge there. There is heavy metal, a couple of heavy metal songs, and so forth. It covers everything, and that's why I'm saying that now that I'm rejecting this current music, it's not because I'm old-fashioned and I only listen to one type of music. No, it's just that it's just bad. And the thing is that what I wanted to share, now this may sound arrogant, and you were saying, why is he sharing all of that? Oh, what is the point? There is a point. You'll just have to listen. So if you survive this audio snippet all the way to the end, and maybe the second part, because I don't think we'll get to everything in this audio snippet, I hope that you will see the point of why all of this apparently meaningless stuff or irrelevant stuff is being shared. But the thing is that I'm surprised sometimes when I'm going through the list, and sometimes I try to buy songs, and I bought a significant percentage of the songs that are on the list, and sometimes when I'm looking for another song to buy, I'm surprised at the songs. It's like, when did I put that song on the list? I don't even know what the song sounds like. But I'm the only one who maintains that file, so that spreadsheet. So how did that song end up there? I don't know. And I know that it's not a coincidence how certain songs end up there. Like the song that we shared before about from Katie Shaw about showing up. I don't know how that song ended up on that list, but that's how I became aware of it as America was dying. It was just such an exact message for America. And so there's a variety of songs there, and sometimes I have to rediscover the song, like go and listen to it. Oh, that's an interesting song. Okay, yeah, I see why it's on the list. But the reason why I'm saying this is that in all of her 17 years, and it's amazing that she's been around for 17 years, Taylor Swift, in all her 17 years of, that's 20 years of music. I mean, that's a long, long time when you think about it. Especially for a musician, to be that, you know, that relevant chart-wise for 17 years. That in her 17 years of being around, not a single song from her, as far as I know, has made it to the list, into the list that I have. Songs from artists I would only write down the lyrics, part of the lyrics, and through the, I would only hear part of the lyrics. I didn't know who was singing it, and I'd have to do a search to look up and find the artist who, you know, and the actual name, title of the song and so forth. But I never did that with a Taylor Swift song. Not a single one. And even though I've done it for songs from artists that I can't name, at will, and songs whose titles I don't know, and they end up on the list. But from quote obscure artists, but Taylor Swift, which is like a well-known name in the music industry, an American well-known name, didn't make a single, none of her songs made it to the list I have. Not a single song. And that to me is astounding. Because this may sound arrogant, but I do believe that a lot of the songs that are there for a reason. They're not there by coincidence. There's something about those songs, and that's why they're there. And I never felt prompted to put a song from her there. Sometimes what happens is I go into a store, and they have music playing, you know, on their speakers, and sometimes I said, oh, what's that song? And that's, I think, how some of the songs end up on the list. And I'm pretty sure that I've gone to Dunkin' Donuts or wherever, and they've had maybe a Taylor Swift song playing, and it's been like in one ear and out the other, and like nothing. So I was intrigued, like, first of all, why is her name popping up so much right after America died? And why don't I have any songs from her? I don't even know a song. I think there's a song that called Shake It Up, but I think if it does exist, the only reason why I know that, if it is an actual song, is because I've heard people talk about it, mentioning it a lot now that she's been on the news so much. But I can't mention titles of a song. So what I did before this recording, I had some thoughts that I wanted to share, but before this recording, what I did was I said, okay, I'm going to end my Taylor Swift drought, and I'm going to start to listen to her. So I started looking up, you know, Taylor Swift and listening to songs. And I listened to more songs from Taylor Swift a few hours ago than I have in her 17 years of being in the music industry. So I listened to a series of songs from her. And I'll share the impression that I got when I forced myself to listen to the songs. When I kind of allowed myself to get engaged with the song, I could feel, I don't know how to explain this, but I could feel someone like taking their hands into my soul, into my heart, and wringing it. And then when the song would end, I almost literally felt pain in my heart or inside of me. It felt like painful. Not that the music was bad. That's not what I'm saying. It's like someone was playing with my emotions, and I could feel the pain. I don't know how to explain it, but it's like I was getting engaged in the song, and as I was getting engaged in the song, I began to feel pain, like very deep pain inside of me. It hurt to listen to the song, not because it was bad. It was just that something was being done to my emotions, and that was kind of shocking to me. But I felt pain when I listened to songs, like for example that Katie Shaw song, as I began to listen to other songs, I sometimes cry. Some songs bring profound sorrow or tears and sadness to me. But that's not what I was what I was feeling when I was listening to her. It was, I felt the pain, and after the pain subsided, I felt like I was still in the same place where I started before I listened to the song. See, like when I have songs that move me and sometimes bring me to tears, and not just emotional tears like, oh, you know, soap opera type tears. No, I mean, like when I start bawling, like start shedding tears, which doesn't happen very often. But when it happens with other songs, I feel like I was transported to something and I was made to feel some reality. And that I was taken somewhere, and that I'm going somewhere after having heard that song. I don't know how to explain that. But with her, I listened to the song, and I felt like after all the pain, it was very painful. After all of that, I started looking around me, looking down around me, and I was still in the same place. I don't know how else to explain that. But the thing is, as I watched the videos and listened to the songs, it kind of reinforced something that I've seen in her. And this is going to sound very strange, but I see in her a beautiful soul. She has a very beautiful soul. And it's like when you're watching her, it's like her soul is so... I don't know how to explain it. Like a multifaceted nature to her soul, and such a uniqueness in terms of personality. I don't know how to explain it. She has a very beautiful soul. It's like a soul that entrances you, and captures you, and then once you're captured, then it's as if the songs begin to manipulate your emotions. Or play with them, and that's when it hurts. It starts hurting. But I can see how, if you're not aware of what's going on, how you can get caught up in that and say, okay, I felt an emotional tug. Therefore, this song is very, very good. And you get enthralled by the beauty of her soul. And then you become a follower of her. And then, but the thing is that, and I'm not saying that she's a witch or something, that she's, you know, putting hexes on people or, you know, cursing or doing these spells on people to get them to buy their records. That's not it. I didn't see that. It's just that she has a beautiful soul, very talented. I mean, she is very talented. And I started reading these stories of all these people who kept saying, because I wanted to hear, what do people say about her? Because when I would listen to her, when I would know that it was a song from her, it just didn't do anything to me. Because I would, see, this time, I allowed myself to get engaged. I forced myself to be exposed to what was in that music. And that's why I felt what I felt. But before, it was just in one ear, out the other. And then I was surprised to hear that all these people, especially music experts and all that, keep talking about how she has a profound songwriting ability, that she's one of the best songwriters of all time, that Rolling Stone or what, I don't know what magazine ranked her as one of the 50 greatest songwriters of all time or something like that. And don't quote me on that, but it was more or less correct statement. Maybe I have the wrong magazine, and maybe it's not the top 50, maybe it's the top 100, but it was more or less in that vein, you know. And on Wikipedia, they also say she's known for her variety and the ability to shift from genres, because she started in country and started moving towards pop, and then from pop, she's been moving to some other genre, whatever. So she's very diverse in her abilities and so forth. So I listened and I started saying, okay, is she really that good as a songwriter? Because they kept talking about her ability to tell a story. And I started watching the video, and to be frank, there were so much words. There were so many words in the song that I didn't catch the story, because it was so many words being crammed into this story that was trying to be told to me, and I couldn't quite figure out. But I could see, and then I began to see, she does have that songwriting ability to say things and put words and the rhyming. So she has like a poet thing going on. But the thing is that there was one song, Anti-Hero, and that was the closest that I got to saying, okay, I like this song. Even though it hurt after the song ended, like the other songs. But I didn't quite get the message of the Anti-Hero. The video was very confusing to me. Maybe I have to analyze it, and maybe I'm too stupid to get the message. But the thing is that after that emotional thing, after a short while, I couldn't remember neither the lyrics nor the music. It's not like when you listen to Can't Buy Me Love by the Beatles. You listen to that once and you know it for the rest of your life. Can't buy me love. Everybody tells me so. Can't buy me love. No, 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 no. It's like you remember the lyrics, you remember the rhythm, you remember the beat, you remember everything about the song. It just hits you. With her songs, I still don't, I can't, if you put a gun to my head to hum a Taylor Swift song, I say, okay, just shoot me then. Because I can't come up with one. I don't remember a single thing. I just listened to a whole bunch of songs. I don't remember a single one. So that's what and then I said, okay, what's going on with her? And what I began to understand, and as I was thinking about all of this a few days ago, one day, maybe it was yesterday or the day before, I was walking outside, And I felt a voice say to me, the day the music died, the day the music died. Because I was thinking about Taylor Swift, and then I heard this voice saying, the day the music died. And I'm sure you know that song, because when I heard that immediately, I thought of, you know, the famous song by Don McLean. And as you may already know, that song was written because or it was based on what happened on February 3rd. I'm reading from the Wikipedia article called The Day the Music Died. On February 3rd, 1959, American rock and roll musicians Buddy Holly, Ritchie Valens, and the big bopper J.P. Richardson were all killed in a plane crash near Clear Lake, Iowa, together with pilot Roger Peterson. The event became known as The Day the Music Died after singer-songwriter Don McLean referred to it as such in his 1971 song American Pie. American Pie. So the thing is, those three, when I read that, it made me think, okay, the three male personalities. And I would dare say Buddy Holly represents the judge personality. Ritchie Valens, I don't know why, he sounds like the visionary personality to me. And the big bopper, J.P. Richardson, would be the conqueror personality, especially because he's the big bopper. And conquerors tend to be tall and big. Conquerors, they're giants that topple other giants. So so it's like the death of the male personalities in America, in American music. But let me just quickly read part of the lyrics of that song, if I can find it here. Okay, so you may know this already, but I'm going. It's a very long song. The lyrics is my goodness, it's like a short novel. But I'll try to skip to the parts that we want to focus on. It starts by saying, a long, long time ago, I can still remember how that music used to make me smile. And I knew if I had my chance that I could make those people dance, and maybe they'd be happy for a while. But February made me shiver. With every paper I'd deliver, bad news on the doorstep, I couldn't take one more step. I can't remember if I cried when I read about his widowed bride. Something touched me deep inside the day the music died. So bye-bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. And the good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye, singing, this will be the day that I die. This will be the day that I die. And, it says then, did you write the book of love, and do you have faith in God above, if the Bible tells you so? Now, do you believe in rock and roll? Can music save your mortal soul? And can you teach me how to dance real slow? And so, this talks about, you know, the death of music, and then he talks about, do you have faith in God above if the Bible tells you so? Do you believe in rock and roll? Can music save your mortal soul? And can you teach me how to dance real slow? And I hope we can get to this in more detail later if you're still listening, if you find any of this relevant. I hope you do, because we're getting to a certain point in all of this. But there's something here, and I hope that as we continue, we can get back to this paragraph or verse or whatever it's called, and see what is being said here. So now let's proceed, shall we say, to the crazier part of the program. Before that, I do want to mention some things about Taylor Swift that I didn't know. I mean, I knew she was well known and all that, but I didn't really know how impressively successful she is, and it's successful in a way that scares me even more about the state of this generation. I'm just going to read an article on the Daily Mail posted on the 26th of October, 2023. And it says Taylor Swift tops the Billboard Music Awards nominations with a whopping 20 nods, marking the latest triumph for songstress amid Travis Kelce romance and wildly successful Eras Tour and film. 20 nominations. 20. I mean, that. And it says here in the article that she already has 29 Billboard Music Awards wins under her belt, making her the most victorious female winner in the show's history. And I think to myself, okay, that's including Madonna, that's including Mariah Carey, that's including Barbara Streisand, that's including Whitney Houston, that's including, just the fact that includes Madonna, it's mind-boggling to me. She has more success, technically, statistically speaking, than Madonna. It's like, what is going on? I mean, you would think that with these numbers, that you're dealing with a behemoth producing music at a level that has never been seen in the history of mankind. But I just try to listen to it, and yes, I can see why it's catchy, why it would sell, but for crying out loud, it's not proportional. You know, the music that's being produced to the level of success that's being displayed here. And I could be wrong. Maybe I'm misquoting here. I couldn't find that to confirm it online. I once heard recently that she had seven songs or seven albums in the top 10 at the same time. And I went, my goodness, I think I heard the Beatles have five songs in the top 10, or the first five songs were Beatles songs in one week back in 64 maybe. And I go, okay, so she's doing more than what even the Beatles could accomplish. So that tells you a lot, like not only about the competition she has, but about this generation. And I don't mean to criticize, I don't mean to belittle her, because she looks like she's very hardworking, she looks like a very nice person, as I said. There's something about her, she has a very beautiful soul. And I can see why people can get kind of enchanted by her. It's like, it's a charm, and it's not like a malicious charm, like she's doing a deal with a witch to get people to buy her records or something like that. I don't perceive that. And maybe that's what she's doing, but I don't think so. The thing is that I'm not criticizing her. I'm just not like, oh, she's a terrible. I'm not saying that. It's just that there's something not matching up, something not right, and that's the fact that her music hurt. It hurt to listen to it. It's like I felt my emotions being tugged and manipulated, like I was being made to feel sorrow and sadness and emotions that I didn't want to feel, that the music was not making me feel. Or the music was making me feel it, but I didn't feel like feeling them. I don't know how to explain that. And I didn't feel happy after I felt it. And I felt like the feelings I got didn't move me to a new place. I was still in the same place. I'm the same person as before the song, only now I'm hurting. I'm in pain. The other thing that I wanted to share I don't have the link here, but I found out that there's a film out there that I think it was last week, and please don't quote me on this, I could be misremembering, but I sort of recall that last week, from the time of this recording, I was surprised to hear her film was the top film of the week. And I said, what? Top film? What you talking about, Willis? And turns out that she, I didn't know this because I'm so disconnected from this generation. Like, oh my goodness, I it's like they're so creepy. I don't even touch them with a 10-foot pole, you know, the stuff that they delve in. All this social nonsense that they delve in. But the thing is that apparently she's doing an Eras tour. And that I find that interesting that that's the name of the tour, Eras. Because the American era just ended. And as she's doing the tour, apparently she was filming it, and then they went to the cinemas and said, can you show this? Do you want to show this? And they said yes. And that said to me even more about how empty our culture has become. Because now they're so short on what they can, you know, show on cinemas, in cinemas, that the cinemas are willing to show a film or movie about concerts. You see what I'm saying? It's like we're so short on creativity now that that's the best that we can do. And not only is it allowed to be shown in cinemas as a film, like, you know, like any other film, like Jaws or Star Wars or whatever, not only that, it can become, it now becomes the number one film in the country. There's something not right. Is she really that good? No, there's something not right. And so now let me get into the strange part of this. And I might be losing a lot, some of you, but I'm sorry to say this, but at this point, it's not that I don't care, but yeah, maybe that's it, but maybe I don't care. But what I mean is I have to do this. I know I have to do this. There's a reason why I have to do this. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start sharing about songs. What I did after having that experience with Taylor Swift's music was to I took my phone where I have, I think maybe 800 of the, I think it's 1,300 songs, now that I remember, on my list. I bought 800 over the years, not all at once. You know, it's like it's been accumulating for almost 20 years. I think, yeah, actually I started in 2006. That's when I bought my first song. And interestingly enough, yeah, now that I think about it, I didn't realize this. Taylor Swift, if I remember correctly, her career started in 2006, the year I started buying songs. And it's been 17 years of buying one song at a time, or, you know, 10 songs every few months or whatever. So now I have these 800 songs. And so what I did was, after listening to Taylor Swift, I took the phone and I pressed the shuffle button, and I said, okay, let it be what it needs to be, and I started listening to songs. So the first song that came up in the shuffle list was the one that I want to share with you about. And what I'm going to do is I want to share the contrast of Taylor Swift's music, and what I experienced with her music, to what I began to experience with the music I do listen to. And I hope you will see what I'm trying to say. There's a contrast. The more songs I heard, the clearer the contrast became. And then the message became clearer and clearer. So as I said, when I was listening to Taylor Swift, I felt my emotions being touched. I was in the presence of someone with a strong aura, with a strong, very beautiful soul that was shining and dazzling me, dazzling me in front of my eyes. But you know, but I was being tugged emotionally, but I wasn't going anywhere. And when I was listening to the lyrics, it was all about things happening to her. It was like all about her. And I don't mean that that's not necessarily bad, because everybody writes from their own experiences. Novelists, songwriters, that's the natural source, because, you know, you're experiencing yourself, so it's natural that from your experiences the songs will flow. But even though that's the case almost all the time, it doesn't necessarily, when it comes out, the product comes out, the song, you don't necessarily associate it with the person's personal experience. You know, it came out from within his experience database and his experience pool, but you're listening to it and you don't think about it being that it's not autobiographical, usually, if you catch what I'm saying. But with Taylor Swift, every song seemed autobiographical, like I was listening to something that happened to her 3 days ago. I mean, that's kind of how it felt. And then that began to make sense, because that's what this society, this generation, this stupid generation, this is the most stupid generation in American history, especially the young ones. This generation has grown up with the obsession about telling everybody about their day. You know, they post, you know, I went to the bathroom at 7 a.m. I ate a donut at 7:20. I was walking down the street at 7:45 and I tripped because the sidewalk, the pavement had this crack there. And then there's a photo, you know, accompanying the text to tell everybody, you know, the crack that the person, you know, tripped over, and so forth. So this obsession with chronicling their lives in public, just like I did this, you know, and a Taylor Swift song is basically that put to music. And it's not just that, it's not that shallow, because there were certain depths, I just couldn't quite understand them, but there was a depth there, but it was like a thin layer below that shallow autobiographical layer. At least it felt very thin. Maybe it's deeper, maybe I'm the idiot who doesn't get it, but I could be wrong, but I don't think so. It just didn't feel that deep. There was... It's not like with other songs that you just, the depth of it just explodes in your face. You see the depth of it. It wasn't like that. So the thing is that it's as if with the song, you never come out of Taylor Swift. It's like you get into her world, and the song keeps you in her world, and you never get out of there. I hope I'm making sense. So... you listen to the song, and the song ends, and you're still in Taylor Swift verse, you know, the Taylor Swift universe. You're in Swift verse, or Taylor verse, because that's easier for me to say. So you're still in Taylor verse. The song never took you out from her introspection, if you catch what I'm saying. It never took you, challenged you to go out to some other place. It just kept you in her world. Let me start sharing. Like the first song, when I played that, hit the shuffle button on my phone to listen to the first song that I have, you know, there. The first song that came up was "Wake Me Up" by Avicii. And I'm just going to play, and I'm going to start doing this. I have a whole bunch of songs here. I know it's not going to, there's too many songs for one audio snippet. And I think that some of you who listen are going to hate me, but I'm going to do it anyway. I know there's a reason and a purpose. I know there is. Maybe I'm overdoing it a little bit, but I'd rather overdo it than underdo it. Because if I underdo it, I know I'll underdo it by much more than I should. So I'd rather overdo it a little or somewhat than to be cautious about it. So I'm going to start with this. What I'm going to do is play the first 30 seconds of each song that I want to share with you. And 30 seconds because I don't want to get into copyright problems. To give you a sense of the song if you haven't heard it, and then talk to you a little bit about it and see how the contrast with Taylor Swift begins to emerge. And why are we talking about Taylor Swift? Because Taylor Swift represents America, represents what died in America. And you say, oh, America's dead, just let's move on. No. There's a lesson that has to be learned here. It's not just that America died. No, there's a lesson for you and for me in all of this. And we have to get it. Because otherwise the death was, it's like the death was partially wasted. Because there's something to retrieve from that, from what happened. So, okay. So I'm going to, let me see if I can pull it up here. And I hope you can listen to it. I'm going to play it. Just the first 30 seconds. You might already know the song, but I'm going to play it here anyway. Here it goes.
Feeling my way through the darkness, guided by a beating heart. I can't tell where the journey went, but I know where to start. Tell me I'm too young to understand. They say I'm caught up in a dream.
Okay, that was 30 seconds. This song is by Avicii. He's a Swedish artist. And it's sad for me to say that I found out, I forget how many years ago, not too long ago, that sadly he committed suicide. So he's gone. A young guy. But if you listen to the whole song, it's like very, very talented young man. So it's really sorrowful to know that he's gone. But the thing is that, and that he went that way too. But you have to recall the musicians, music is the personality that's most strongly related to music is the visionary personality. The visionary personality is very emotional. They go with flows of emotion. So they can also, that the emotional flow can also go in the wrong direction. And that's why a lot of them die very young, either out of excesses or like, unfortunately, as this young man who took his own life. But the thing is that, let me just try to read you the lyrics for that song. If I can quickly, I'm going to genius.com. There's a website for lyrics. I'm going to see if I can find this song quickly here. Wake Me Up, Avicii. Okay. That's how I pronounce it. I'm not sure if that's the right pronunciation, but it's spelled A-V-I-C-I-I. So I'm pronouncing it like as if it was Italian, but, or semi-Italian, but. Who knows? But the thing is that the lyrics, when they finally pop up here, read as follows. Now, you may have heard this part already, and I hope you could hear the song. It says, feeling my way through the darkness, guided by a beating heart. So notice right off the bat, this thought that came to my heart about Taylor Swift, that the song hurt badly. It really hurt. I literally felt the physical pain inside my heart being tugged. But I ended up going nowhere. I felt like that pain didn't take me anywhere. I was like, I'm still the same person in the same place, and the only difference is now I'm hurting. But notice this song. And this was the first song that came up in the shuffle. right off the bat, it's talking about moving. Feeling my way through the darkness, guided by a beating heart. I can't tell you where the journey will end, but I know where to start. Notice, right off the bat, I'm not standing still, brother. I'm moving. And I'm trying to take you with me. And then it says, they tell me I'm too young to understand. They say I'm caught up in a dream. Well, life will pass me by if I don't open up my eyes. Well, that's fine by me. So this is a person who say, I'm going to venture into the unknown. I'm going to move. I'm not going to stay in my safe place and be static. Oh, and speaking of that, that reminded me of something I wanted to mention. I would look at Travis Kelce, the boyfriend, the Kansas City tight end that she's in a romantic relationship with. And I don't know, something bothered me about the guy. There's something about him in his face that bothered me. And a few days later, I saw an advert, a commercial on television with this guy with big face on television. And what he was doing, he was promoting the clot shots, the rape by injection, the new variant of the poison. And he was gladly promoting it and being all funny about it. And I said, oh, okay, so that's what he is. He is that. That's what he represents. And those are the, and who falls for that sort of nonsense that this Travis Kelce is promoting now? I mean, he doesn't need the money. He's not doing it for the money. He's doing it because he really believes in that stuff too. And obviously he's getting paid for it, and that motivates him even more. But if he was remotely opposed to these injections, he would not be doing the adverts, obviously. But who falls for those adverts? The people who live in security land, safe land, because they're being told, that's safe and effective. It protects you, so if you get hurt, so it's the safest, most reasonable thing to do. And they go, well, who is recommending this? The CDC. So should I listen to the CDC or some crazy conspiracy, right-wing conspiracy theorist? What is safer? Oh, safer, CDC, because they are official. They are government. They're established. They're recognized. Those crazy conspiracy theory, right-wing nut jobs, who knows, who is right and who is wrong in that bunch. So they play it safe. They're the ones who wear triple masks. I've seen a few people outside with double masks even today, even in these days. At the time of this recording, that's the people who want to play it safe. They are the people who never venture into the darkness. So it says here, they say I'm caught up in a dream. It's like someone pursuing a dream. And as I read that, it kind of reminded me of myself, the dream that I had of the country, of America, and lots of things that I've done in my life that have been associated to that dream. And I was caught up in a dream, and then it says here, life will pass me by if I don't open up my eyes. Well, that's fine by me. Well, that's exactly how I felt, especially now that America died, that all these years went by. My life is in, I could have invested my life pursuing other things, and it was all for naught, it feels like. But that's what you do when you take a chance, when you let yourself be caught up in a vision, in a dream. You have to take the risk, and sometimes it's all lost, apparently. But it's better to do that than to play it safe and say, I'll never, never take a chance. Obviously, that doesn't mean just go and take any chance, any crazy chance, just to feel like you're alive. No, that'd be stupid. But if you're convinced of something and you have clarity of the vision, and the vision is burning inside of you, you have to carry it out. You have to let yourself flow. And even if the dream doesn't come true, you have to pursue it. Because Otherwise, you'll regret for the rest of eternity wondering what would have happened if I had followed that dream. And even if the dream doesn't come to pass, the purposes of you pursuing that dream will be fulfilled. So it will not be all lost at the end of the day. So it says here, so wake me up when it's all over, when I'm wiser and I'm older. All this time I was finding myself and I didn't know I was lost. So wake me up when it's all over, when I'm wiser and I'm older. All this time I was finding myself and I didn't know I was lost. I still don't quite understand what he meant by that, but if I'm not wrong, what I get from that is that that a person who stays in the same place and doesn't dream, who doesn't embrace the visionary personality, is actually the person who gets lost. If you let something go, you save it. If you hold on to it, you will lose it. It's that principle. And the people who play it safe, well, I'm not lost, I'm here. I didn't get lost pursuing some dream. Well, actually, you lost yourself the moment you did pursue the dream. You lost yourself. You lost your whole purpose for your life. You lost it the moment you decided to stay in place and play it safe. And I think that's what he means, or what it should mean, I think. Okay, so that's the first song. So I hope you see the contrast. Taylor Swift made me stay in place and hurt as I did, but Avicii made me feel desire to move forward, to pursue the dream. And when I hear the song, I get this stirring, the deep stirring in my heart, because there's something about it, but it's a stirring, and there's pain sometimes. But it's a pain that moves you to a place. It's not just pain for the sake of pain. And the other thing that with Taylor Swift was it all felt like very at the level of emotions, but at the level of the server personality. See, the out of the five personalities, the two that are most directly related to emotion are the server and the visionary. The server is the one who, when server personality, because it's everything that is about pleasing, you know, the server, the waiter wants to please those that are being waited on, this constant desire to please. And then there's always the, when it gets distorted, it starts demanding quid pro quo, I please you, then you please me. That personality, the people who have that personality very strongly are the most sociable ones. They're the ones who love communion with other people. To them, it's very important to have friendships and to be in a crowd, to be accepted, to be liked, and all that. So it's all and then emotions flow in that social communion that they crave. So the emotions flow at that level. With the visionary, the emotions flow in a different way. The visionary becomes enamored with a vision, and his emotions or her emotions flow towards that vision. And it drives that person to do crazy things in pursuit of the vision. So it's very different. The server personality, the emotions, if they're not, you know, channeled properly, or if it becomes corrupted, the server personality, it causes people to obsess with social communion, and that's the manifestation that we see with this generation. It's so obsessed with social media. It's this obsession with being in touch and communion with other people, and then everything becomes so opera-ish. And I think one of the people who was very responsible for introducing that venom into these last few generations is Kim Kardashian. She single-handedly has done a lot of damage to these last couple of generations. Because she and her family introduced this, you know, concept of just the pursuit of all these superficial things and reality, you know, show type stuff, nonsense, relationships and all this rubbish. And that's what I could feel in Taylor Swift's music. It's emotions, but it's all in terms of social relationships. It was always staying within her and her group of people she relates with, but those emotions never came out of that ecosphere to channel towards something outside of that ecosphere, if you catch what I'm trying to say. So now let me say another, let me mention another song that will seem crazy, but it was one of, I did skip a few songs as the shuffle, progressed, the order progressed, but they're more or less in the order of the shuffle and with not too many skipped in between. And sometimes they are exactly in the order that they came out. So I think the next song, the song that immediately followed was this one that I wrote down here. It's I Keep Forgetting. So let me, before I forget, where is that? I'll play it for you here, if I can find it. I Keep Forgetting. Okay. You may have heard this song before, so I'm going to play the first 30 seconds and see how it goes. Okay. I hope you could hear that. It didn't sound too loud. But it's a song by Michael McDonald. I think he used to be with the Doobie Brothers, if I'm not mistaken. It's called I Keep Forgetting Every Time You're Near. Let me find the lyrics right now for that song. It says, I keep forgetting we're not in love anymore. I keep forgetting things will never be the same again. I keep forgetting how you made that so clear. I keep forgetting every time you're near. Every time I see you smile, hear your hello, saying you can only stay a while. Hey, I know that it's hard for you to say the things that we both know are true. But tell me, how come I keep forgetting we're not in love anymore? And so forth. And it says, why are you gone and why the game is through? If this is what is real, if this is what is true, tell me how come I keep forgetting we're not in love anymore, and so forth. So what is the point of this song? Is there are two things. First of all, the introduction, you know, that beat. You hear that a couple of times. You never forget that song, the beat. You may forget the lyrics. You may forget who sang the song. But that beat, and that's something I couldn't hear in Taylor Swift's music. It was like there wasn't that unique, special sound that you go, my goodness, this is special. I'm listening to something special, and this is what you catch right off the bat with this song. And Michael McDonald is American, if I remember correctly. And the song starts talking about, okay, there's something not right here. And am I supposed to move on from this? Because he's talking with someone that that apparently they're not in love anymore, but he keeps forgetting. So maybe he should write it down or something. But the thing is that he's kind of like, am I supposed to stay in the same place or should I move? And that's like another theme in most of the songs that have some relevance. It's like some just take you to a new place. Others are in a certain place and wondering, there's something not right with the situation here. So either I move or maybe I'm misunderstanding reality, but it's a questioning of the current situation, if you catch what I mean. The next song that came up, if I'm not mistaken, in that because I did skip a few in between, but I think this was the immediately following song that came up in the shuffle, and I'm going to pull it up here. Okay, let me play it. The first 30 seconds. Okay, I wish that's exactly 30 seconds, so, but I wish I could have played a couple of more seconds if you could hear it. She says, "Fly, Robin, fly up, up to the sky." So this is by The Silver Connection. I think it's a song from the 70s. By the way, the Avicii song was maybe from 2000 and something. It's a 21st century song. The song from Michael McDonald was from 1982, if I'm correct. And this song, Fly Robin Fly, is from the 70s. Not sure what year, but I believe 70s or 1980 at the most. So let me pull up the lyrics here very quickly. I'm pulling them up from genius.com. It's a website for lyrics. Fly, Robin, fly. Oops. Oh, here it is. Okay. It's very short. Now that I realize it, the only thing it says is fly, Robin, fly, fly, Robin, fly, fly, Robin, fly, up, up to the sky. And then it says it several more times until the song ends. But the first thing that I wanted to mention about this song is, and it's a quality that's prevalent in many disco songs from the 70s. And I can see here that apparently this song is from 1975, from what they say here. That song, like many disco-type songs, has a lot of classical orchestra sound to it. I don't know if you could hear, you know, that orchestra sound in the background and the violin and all that, very, very orchestra-like. And a lot of people criticize disco music. Oh, that's just boring discotheque music. Lame and repetitive, but no, there's a lot of style to it, and very very elegant. Many of the songs are very elegant, very well composed. There's a beauty there. You hear that song once, you don't forget it. That beat, it just stays with you, and that's what I'm trying to emphasize. There's a certain quality of beauty in the song, just the lyric, the melody or the harmony, whatever you want to call it. Or the combination of both, it is just beautiful, and then it says "Fly, Robin, fly," and the lyric and those short lyrics go very well with the song, What do I think when I hear that song? I see a robin flying up to the sky, just like the song says. And it's almost like I see myself doing it with the robin, with the bird. It's like I am being called out from my place of being grounded to the earth and being told to fly and to challenge the laws of gravity and to fly and to break the limitations of the earthly perspective. If you see what I'm saying, that song is telling you to go somewhere. It's challenging you to break away from the comfort of the ground. And then it says up, up to the sky. So not only fly, just fly as high as you can. It's a very visionary call, a visionary exhortation. And it tells you to go somewhere. So let me now pull up the next song that I wrote down here. And let me see if I can. Let's see, how much time do we have? I think we still have time for a few more songs. So, and I know there's a point to this. So please, I hope you will get an impartation from all of this, of something positive. Okay, let's play this one. So this song is called Fire Lake by Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band. It's a song from the 1980s, I think. At least that's how I remember it. It's an 80s song that I heard when I was a kid. But let's confirm. So I'm going to pull up the lyrics and to share what the principle is behind this song. And as you can see, it's the same thing, the introduction. You hear that song once, you never forget it. There's a beauty in it. Just without listening to the lyrics, it takes you. You feel like you're galloping. It has that galloping beat to it, like you're on a horse and you're galloping towards a place. And that there's excitement. That there is like that you're pursuing something wonderful. And that there's anticipation and hope. Without saying a single word, that's how what you get when you let yourself be led by the song. It's not the same thing as what I was experiencing with Taylor Swift. With Taylor Swift, when I finally let myself be moved by the song, all I felt was pain, but I didn't move anywhere. What does the lyric say? Who's gonna ride that chrome three-wheeler? Who's gonna make that first mistake? Who wants to wear those gypsy leathers all the way to Fire Lake? Who wants to break the news about Uncle Joe? You remember Uncle Joe? He was the one afraid to cut the cake. Who wants to tell poor Aunt Sarah, Joe's run off to Fire Lake? Joe's run off to Fire Lake. Who wants to brave those bronze beauties lying in the sun? With their long, soft hair falling, flying as they run. Ah, they smile so shy, and they flirt so well. And they lay you down so fast, till you look straight up and say, Oh Lord, am I really here at last? Who wants to play those eights and aces? Who wants a raise? Who needs a stick? Who wants to take that long shot gamble and head out for Fire Lake? So what this song is saying is, who is going to take a chance? It even says in the second line, who's going to make that first mistake? Because a lot of people don't take chances because they're afraid of one mistake. and they sacrifice a big gain for fear of one small mistake. And I've experienced that in my job experience and with people that don't want to risk one little mistake. So a big gain is sacrificed to avoid making one small mistake. And so it says here, it talks about Uncle Joe, who was afraid to cut the cake. Apparently, you know, he was so afraid of knives that, you know, he thought he might cut himself, I guess, cutting the cake. But then he decides to run off to Fire Lake. And Fire Lake, it just makes me think of the fire, of the vision. That's what it makes me think of. Fire Lake, the lake of this, where you have this vision burning inside of you that is moving you to take chances. So again, you can see the song is taking you somewhere. And not only the lyrics, but the music itself is making you gallop to a new place of hope, of excitement, of adventure, of something different. So that's Fire Lake. And the arrangement. And the other thing is, these songs have this beauty that they're not the same thing all the time. They do this crescendo, and then they go silent, and then they do the crescendo again. And it's like listening to a symphony. There's a flow and a beauty, an ebb and flow across the song. And that's what you experience with Fire Lake. That's not what you experience with Taylor Swift. These are the songs that this generation doesn't care about. Why are we saying all of this? Because we want to emphasize why this generation died and what we have to do to make sure not to die with them, and what we have to tell others so that they won't die with this generation. The next song that we want to share, I'm pretty sure you've heard this one before. And here it goes. Okay, I'm pretty sure you know who that is, if you could hear the song, I hope. That's the Beatles, and the song is Things We Said Today. And I hope, if you could hear the lyrics, that again, right off the bat, same story. Let me just pull it up here. Things We Said Today. Okay. It says, right off the bat, you say you will love me if I have to go. Again, someone who's not standing still, someone who's moving somewhere. You say you will love me if I have to go. You'll be thinking of me, somehow I will know. Someday when I'm lonely, wishing you weren't so far away, then I will remember things we said today. So, in other words, there's going to be sacrifice. He's going to be separating himself from her, and there's going to be sorrow and pain. And that's one thing, people who have the server personality distorted and too overpowering don't separate from people. They become too emotionally attached to each other, so they become attached to a town or to a family, to a friend, a group of friends or whatever, and they never that's why they never take chances or separate, because it hurts too much to separate themselves from their friends and family. So they live in this very limited world, this limited ecosphere, just like the ecosphere that Taylor Swift pulls you into with her songs. But in this song, it's different. It's someone who says, I have to go somewhere, and I really care for you, and it's going to hurt, but I'm going to do it anyway. And I know it's going to hurt you, but you love me. But you know why I'm doing this, so you're going to tough it out too. That's what this song is basically saying. And then again, the beginning of the song. You hear that song once, you don't ever forget it. At least I wouldn't. I didn't. That's why it's on my list, I guess. But again, it's the same principle. The galloping. I don't know if you can see that. And it's not complicated. There's no high-tech sounds, no mosquito synthesizer or whatever. It's just this intense, like a galloping dungeon. It's this intense rhythm. It's like you start the song. It's like you're riding a horse, and the horse is running right off the bat, and it's taking you somewhere. There's an intensity. There's and this one not only has the visionary thing, it has the conqueror thing. Someone who is leaving or separating himself temporarily from his loved one to go conquer something somewhere. So it's like a riding on a horse and going to conquer and fight a battle and conquer some territory. And so again, it's the same principle. You're being taken somewhere, and you're not being, your emotions are not being controlled by emotional communion attachments, server personality attachments. So that is that that song. And the next song is, I'm pretty sure you know this song as well. It's very, very popular. And I'm telling you, each of these songs, I could be wrong, but each of these songs, and they're just five of many, or however many we have done already, I would dare say they're all vastly superior to all that I heard from Taylor Swift. But except for the Beatles, and maybe not even the Beatles, most, if not all of them, didn't have half of the, or even a third or a quarter of the success that Taylor Swift is having. So that tells you not only that the competition is very weak nowadays, but also the demand, the generation, this generation is satisfied with very little. Because I can assure you that if this was a different generation, a different environment, that Taylor Swift would be growing into other dimensions. She'd be getting out of that ecosphere that she's enclosed herself in, because she'd be challenged. She would know she wouldn't survive if she stayed in that ecosphere. But no one is challenging her, so she's happy there. So she just, you know, it's like someone who dances around something without ever delving deeper. It's just super surface digging around the edges, but never really taking a shovel and digging deep and going into deeper things. Okay, so now I forgot the song. Okay, now I remember the song. And I'm sure you've heard this one before, if you're old enough. And I'm wondering if most of the, like if I take a 20-year-old person and play these songs for them, if they would get, if they would know what they are, or if they would be impressed by it, go, oh, where did that magical music come from? I don't know. If you're old enough, many of the songs are very well known, I would imagine. So let me play this song here first. Let me find it. Okay, here it goes. So as you could hear, hopefully, it wasn't coming out too loud. The song is Chiquitita by ABBA, a Swedish group again. If you read one of the last postings on the website where these recordings are posted, you will know that we talked a lot about Sweden and music. And maybe I think it was the last posting. And as I was writing or taking dictation, shall we say, of that posting, I became aware of Sweden's very strong relevance in music. And I had never really seen it. I knew about ABBA, I knew about Ace of Base, I knew about Roxette and all and so forth. But I really didn't know how relevant. There's a very important relevance of Sweden to music. Very important relevance. Let me read this. This is a beautiful, not only, you listen to the beginning of it, it just catches you. You hear this once, you never forget it. You never forget this song. If you hear the whole thing, and you can hear it well, because I don't think you can hear it very well with the sound that I have here. But the lyrics say, Chiquitita, tell me what's wrong. And as you may know, Chiquitita is Spanish for little one or tiny one. Chiquita means small one, and Chiquitita is even smaller than that. It's like tiny one. But it's kind of in an affectionate way, tiny one, you know, little one, very little one. tell me what's wrong. You're enchained by your own sorrow. In your eyes, there is no hope for tomorrow. How I hate to see you like this. There's no way you can deny it. I can see that you are oh so sad, so quiet. And then it says, Chiquitita, tell me the truth. I'm a shoulder you can cry on. Your best friend, I'm the one you must rely on. You were always sure of yourself. Now I see you broken and fettered. How it hurts to see you cry, and how it hurts to see you sad. I hope we can patch it up together. Chiquitita, you and I know how the heartaches come and they go, and the scars they're leaving. You'll be dancing once again, and the pain will end. You'll have no time for grieving. Chiquitita, you and I cry, but the sun is still in the sky and shining above you. Even though you cry, the sun is shining in the sky. Let me hear you sing once more. So let me hear you sing some more, like you did before, the way you used to do before. Sing a new song, Chiquitita. Try once more, like you did before. Sing a new song, Chiquitita. And that's the lyrics. I must tell you, when I was reading this the first time before this recording, I started crying. And crying almost unconsolably, because it felt like the song was being sung to me, like I was the Chiquitita, the one who was enchained by the sorrow of what has happened to America, and America is dead. And sometimes I do feel like there's no hope for tomorrow. Like, what of all the investment is all gone, and where to go, what to do. And then this song is, you know, a person, it feels like the truth, trying to console the people who are mourning what has happened. So, then it says, it says, now I see you broken and fettered, how it hurts to see you cry, how it hurts to see you sad, I hope we can patch it up together. And it says, it says you'll be dancing once again. It's like giving Chiquitita hope. You'll be dancing once again, and the pain will end. You'll have no time for grieving because you'll be achieving things or fulfilling what could not be fulfilled here. And then it says, and this is the part that I hadn't really noticed it in the song until I saw it in writing, when it says, Chiquitita, you and I cry, but the sun is still in the sky. The sun is still in the sky, and to me the sun represents the truth. The truth is still in the sky, and the truth is in control. And shining above you, the truth is shining above you. It has not forgotten you, the truth is shining above you. Even though you cry, the sun is shining in the sky. So, as you can see, this is talking to a person who is grieving because the hope is gone. And you can only hope when you're moving towards a vision. I mean, if you don't have a vision, there's nothing to hope for. So, and it's talking about the pain, because when you pursue a vision, there's a risk of pain. And instead of saying you should have never taken the chance, say, here, come, a shoulder to cry on. It's okay. It will still be okay, and you'll be able to dance once again. So again, it's a song that doesn't keep you in some ecosphere of emotionalism, of soap opera sentimentalism. It is a song that inspires you to continue the pursuit of the dream and the hope. It's not a song about standing still and being trapped in an ecosphere of emotionalism, of soap opera emotions, which is what happens when you listen to Taylor Swift, talented as she is, because she hasn't, see, that's what the public demands of her, and she gives them that in the context of her very talented gifts. So it's why this strange mixture of very talented, very brilliant, very wonderful abilities, but applied at a very superficial level. Taylor Swift does not sing songs that tell you to pursue something or point you to the sky. See the song, this ABBA song, is literally pointing you to the sky, saying the sun is still shining in the sky above you. It's saying, look out from within the realm of your current horizontal environment and look up. And that's what true music does, the true visionary music. And that's what this generation never understood. It was never exposed to it. It didn't care for it. It was so obsessed updating their Facebook status on Facebook and reporting on their, logging their toilet entries on Twitter and so forth. And they were too busy doing that to really care to be exposed to anything else. We're running short on time, but I think we have time for a few more. If you're still listening. So the next one is a strange song. Strange to some of you. I think some of the ones that we have played so far are relatively well known to a lot of people, but this one starts showing the variety that's on the list. You know, it's not all nice lift music, elevator music type songs, but let me play this one. I hope you can hear it. Played a little over 30 seconds. This song is Alive by Pearl Jam, a group from Seattle, I think, back in the 90s. It's a shame I can't play you the whole thing, but he starts saying, alive, I'm still alive. He keeps singing, I'm alive, I'm still alive. So let me just share the lyrics and you'll see what we're trying to convey here. Hopefully it will be clear or make sense. Alive Pearl Jam. All right, so it says, son, quote, she said, have I got a little story for you? What you thought was your daddy was nothing but a, I don't know what. While you were sitting home alone at age 13, your real daddy was dying. Sorry you didn't see him, but I'm glad we talked. And then the chorus says, oh, I'm still alive. Hey, I'm still alive. And he repeats that, like, very forcefully. Now, why am I sharing this song with you? It's the same thing. The son was in a situation where, you know, he had his father, his mother, and everything was good. And then suddenly the mother comes and tells him, you know, that guy that you call daddy, he's really not your daddy. Your real daddy died when you were alone at age 13. It's kind of like a revelation of something that shook his world. So he was in a comfort zone of a nice communion, server style communion, and then suddenly he's given this information that shakes him. And the thing about I'm still alive here is that it's, let me share what, on the Wikipedia page, what the singer, the lead singer, Vedder, says about this. So I'm reading from the Wikipedia article. Rather than being the inspirational song most interpreted as, Vedder had a quite different meaning in mind, stating in regard to the song's protagonist, he's still dealing, he's still growing up, he's still dealing with love, he's still dealing with the death of his father. All he knows is, I'm still alive. Those three words, that's totally out of burden. Vedder stated at Pearl Jam's 2006 VH1 Storytellers appearance that over the years, the meaning has changed for him. He said, in the original story, a teenager is being made aware of a shocking truth that leaves him plenty confused. It was a curse. I'm still alive. The audience's response to the song is what has brought about the change in meaning for Vedder. He added, they lifted the curse. The audience changed the meaning for me. So in other words, when he wrote the song, or when they wrote the song, the phrase, I'm still alive, was the son crying, I wish I was dead, but I'm still alive. After, it's like the pain of this information is so strong, I wish I was dead, that I wasn't alive to hear something like this. So he's saying, I'm still alive in pain. And that's how he meant it at the beginning. But like when I listened to the song, I didn't hear that as exactly the same reaction as the audiences. I'd say I'm still alive. Like you think that you're bringing me down? No, I'm still standing. You know, kind of like the Elton John song, I'm still standing. I'm still alive, and that's how I would feel when I'd hear that song after all the things I've gone through personally. You know, despite all of it, I'm still alive, and they haven't been able to bring me down. And interesting how, see, the song was taking people somewhere. That's what I'm trying to say. The song didn't, see, if the song was like an Ecosphere song, like with Taylor Swift, then the audience would have been brought into Vedder's, the singer's, depression, and also felt that being alive was a curse, if you see what I'm saying. But no, they heard the song, and the song took them somewhere else, and then they told Vedder, hey, this is the place we found with your song. Come with us. See what I'm trying to say? The song was not an autobiography, even though part of this is apparently autobiographical. I mean, the song is partly inspired by Vedder's life. So just like Taylor Swift's songs, they're all autobiographical, it feels like. But they were brought into the thinking of Vedder, even though the song was autobiographical, they were taken by the song somewhere else, outside of Vedder's understanding. So what Vedder meant for one thing, they took for another, and it became another thing, because that's what it was meant to be, even though Vedder didn't realize it. Because visionaries sometimes speak things that they don't understand, and then the people that receive what they say understand what it really meant, even though the visionary didn't quite understand what he himself was saying. So there's a life in the song. Visionaries, the words of visionaries are flowing rivers of life, at least when they are in the truth, obviously. If they are all corrupted, then it's just deception. But that's the difference. I hope you can see the difference with the Taylor Swift song. It's not, it was autobiographical, yet it didn't suck the audience, including me, because I didn't know about this until a few hours ago. I wasn't sucked into the depression of Vedder and saying, oh, what how horrible it is to live with these truths, living with these truths. Instead, it's like, no, despite these truths, these setbacks, I'm still alive, and saying it forcefully. And I wish it could have heard the chorus, because it's very forceful. But that's what real music is. That's all of that's what died on the 18th of September, 2023. America's ability to produce that type of music. Now we produce Taylor Swift music, which operates at a different level, and I hope you can see it. And the reason why we're sharing this is so that we can get an impartation of what was of the treasures of the past, so that they are not lost on us because of the contamination of the present. And it's more than music. I hope you see that we're not just talking about music. It's much more than that. I just hope you see that. I'm very hopeful that you are seeing it. So I think that we're done for now. And we will continue with the next song. And the next group of songs in the next audio snippet. There are a lot of songs. I feel like we may end up having to skip a lot of them, but I feel that each one brings a message or reinforces a message. And there's an impartation here. I hope you see it. There's an impartation. And it's very important if you are a person who's been reading the website where these recordings are posted. My concern has been over the years that a lot of the articles are taken, have a lot of information, and I say that in quotes, information. And sometimes the information is so much that one begins to focus on the information and on the dry information itself. But the website was created for something much, much bigger than just providing information. It was to provide a vision. The information is to fuel the vision. And the vision is never really explicitly stated in detailed terms. It's kind of hinted at throughout the website. But I hope that as we go through these songs, even though it doesn't seem like it has anything to do with anything, that as we go through these songs, that somehow it will awaken the river that the website was intended to awaken in you when it was inspired, or when I heard, when I saw what I saw, the vision that I saw, literally, that prompted the start of that website. I hope that through these apparently meaningless songs, that it will spark that fire and you will see the vision that the website was created for, and that you will burn with that vision. That is my hope. And the reason why it was never explicitly stated is because if it was explicitly stated, it would kill the vision. It's kind of ironic that if you just say it like, you know, like mission, vision statement, like it was a company, you actually end up sabotaging the vision. It just can't be done like that. You just have to, you either see it or you don't. And if you don't see it, then you can't see it. But if you do see it, you will see it, and it will burn like the sun. It will glow like the sun, like a lake full of fire, but not the other lake of fire. You're not the bad one. You know, this is a good lake of fire. A lake represents a storehouse of things, and you will accumulate a storehouse of fire of the vision of what we are to pursue. So we'll continue if you are interested in the next audio snippet with these songs. Thank you very much for listening.